Welcome to Shaken and Disturbed, everybody. Ooh, he's got a glass of water.
I'm being professional and wetting the whistle before we start. I thought you were going to keep going, but here we go.
The whis, he's wetting the whis. Welcome to Shaken and Disturbed. I am Darren Karp, here with John Thrasher.
Hello.
John has water. I have a sparkly substance from Trader Joe's, my seltzer from Trader Joe's.
A sparkly substance? There you go. You know, I typically would have, you remember the days Darren's making a great face. By the way, watch us on YouTube so you can see all of this.
Yes, subscribe. Smash that subscribe button. Look at me smashing.
There you go. Oh, look at Darren smash.
That's going to be the thumbnail, isn't it, this week?
It might be. It'll probably end up being that. You know, last summer, especially, I was really going ham on Diet Cokes every time we would record.
Yes.
I don't know if I told you, but I've started to kind of give up Diet Coke a little bit. Just a little bit. I'm not having one or two a day like I was before. I'm not buying it at the supermarket. Let's put it that way. If I get it, it's usually like, you know, at lunch when I'm at work or something, I might grab one.
I get it out at dinner. If I'm out somewhere, I'll get a Diet Coke as like a treat. But yeah, I stop buying it too, just to like have less diet soda. I mostly just drink seltzer and water now, or like Gatorade Zero.
That's where I am. Because, you know, if you listen to this week's NMR that's up and available now, we talk a little bit about how I got another cold. Okay, a couple of weeks ago, we had to take a week off. Because,
yes, you did. It's like you have a child at home.
I know. Well, I think it's because I'm back in the office. You know, I had been remote for the last 3 years. I have a new position now.
And on a college campus is like...
On a college campus.
It just feels like that's even more of a petri dish of...
I know, it's true.
Whatever the fuck college kids have going around these days.
And God only knows. But anyway, I'm back to just water for now, which I think is probably the best and healthiest option, of course.
You and Magic are on the same type of drinking diet. Mm-hmm.
I wish he was. He's clearly drinking and eating other things because he's three times the size he is as well.
You got to have him on the video, though. Like, remember we said that this was going to be the new thing, that he was going to make an appearance of some sort? It'd be nice.
You know, he's been doing this thing recently where he hides under my bed a lot. Not like necessarily hides, but just hangs out under there. He never used to do that. And I never know where he is. And then he's under my bed. So like every time we record almost, he's under the bed. So
he's trying to stay away from the paparazzi. That's obvious.
Yeah, that's obvious. Yeah. I will say one last thing about Magic, and we'll get into this week's episode, is I asked some people, I think one of our NMRs for Patreon was called Should I Monetize Magic or something?
Yes.
And some folks were commenting, they were like, I would buy a shirt with that. And I was thinking, because of how popular he has become on Instagram, I told you that Instagram reel has like 200 plus thousand views. I'm like, maybe I'll set up my own little Etsy store and like people can buy Magic merchandise. I mean,
as long as
he
gets the proceeds, because you're not allowed to pimp him out without him getting something. Like 15% of the profits need to go to his treats or something like that.
Okay. How about 15% of the profits are going to go to his cat Ozempic that he's going to end up on?
Oh, let's not fat shame him.
I'm not. I'm saying he's gigantic and needs to be, you know, for health reasons, needs to chill out a little bit. Yeah, he's gigantic. It's true.
Let's not shame him. Let's just get into this week's case, John.
Yeah, we're done cat shaming, okay? We're not fat shaming, we're cat shaming.
We're cat shaming. I love it.
There you go. All right. Anyway, let's get into this episode, as Darren said. This one's interesting. So on February 21st, 1945, young couple Marilyn Reese and Sam Shepard married and settled in Bay Village, which is a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. Now, the Shepherds were a prominent family in the Cleveland area. Sam and Marilyn led rich social lives within their community. In 1947, a couple years later, they welcomed their first child, Samuel, or Chip, as he was called.
Always makes me think of Beauty and the Beast. That would be my character. Chip. Remember Chip?
Yes. Chip. By the way, Chip is also a Beanie Baby. More to come on that eventually.
More to come.
In 1950, that's all we're going to say about that. In 1951, Sam began working at the Bayview Hospital, founded by the Shepherd family. A couple years later, in 1954, the couple was getting ready to continue growing their family. Marilyn got pregnant with their second child in early March. And on the evening of July 3rd, 1954, Sam and Marilyn, who is now 4 months pregnant, invited two of their neighbors, Don and Nancy, over to their home for dinner. These names are
every neighbor
so...
is Don and Nancy. I have nine Don and Nancy's as my neighbors.
Absolutely. 100%. But these names are also kind of just such 50s names. Like, you don't really hear a lot of Donalds and Nancy's being born anymore, you know?
Yeah,
Marilyn
you don't.
Especially, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, names are cyclical. Eventually, they do end up coming back around. So maybe they're due soon. But anyway.
Absolutely.
By all accounts, the evening was a lot of fun. As the evening grew late, Sam fell asleep on a day bed while Nancy and Don left to go home around midnight. In the small hours of July 4th, sometime between 3 and 5 in the morning, Marilyn Shepherd was murdered. At 5:50 a.m., Sam Shepherd called his close personal friend, J. Spencer Hook. Spencer owned and operated a local butcher shop and also happened to be the mayor of Bay Village. Sam's phone call to Spencer was brief and concerning. He only said, quote, "For God's sake, Spen, get over here quick. I think they've killed Marilyn," end quote.
Now, I feel like you have to say it in a newsy voice, like, "For God's sake, Spen, get over here quick. I think they've killed Marilyn."
That's amazing. I love the way you did that. Perfect.
You're welcome.
Yeah, because that's, by the way, how they talked in the 50s, everybody.
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, Spencer and his wife rushed to Sam's side right away, as did Sam's brother, Richard, who was also a practicing doctor. Richard confirmed that Marilyn was beyond medical assistance, at which point Mayor Hook called the Bay Village police. Investigators were met with a trail of blood leading all through the house, as well as signs that seemed to indicate that both a robbery and a violent struggle had taken place. Now, before we move on, Darren, I'm just remembering something that I want to make sure we point out here. This was a case suggestion by our good Patreon friend, Susan. So thank you, Susan, I forgot to mention this at the top of the show. If you guys are listening on Patreon and you're a sussy radish, you can suggest cases for us. This is one that Susan sent in a while back, actually. And we wanted to make sure we put it in.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so thank you, Susan, for that. Yeah.
So Marilyn's body was examined. She had suffered from 35 different wounds, most around her head and hands, which says to me, obviously, a defensive wounds with the hands, at least.
Sounds 27, like it, yeah.
27 of these wounds were the result of bludgeoning with an unknown weapon.
Oh my God.
Sam's other brother, Steve, arrived around the same time as authorities, and Sam was suffering from a neck injury, and his brothers brought him in for medical treatment. Police made no objections to Marilyn's husband leaving the scene. Okay. After receiving medical treatment, Sam gave investigators a preliminary account of what happened leading up to her death. It's interesting that he had a neck injury when he fell asleep on the couch. Just stating that. Now, Sam recounted that sometime after he'd fallen asleep on the daybed or couch, same thing, he was woken up by Marilyn's screams. He rushed up to the master bedroom and saw a white person with bushy hair standing over the bed. Okay. Thank God you and I are both white, but we don't have bushy hair.
Well, listen, you can make your own opinion. I did just get a haircut, and I have to say, I'm kind of loving it.
High and tight. I love it.
Keep going. Now, I'm gonna keep looking at myself.
Oh, you're gonna. Okay, cool. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's good. Now, according to Sam, he and the intruder struggled, but he was struck on the back of the head and lost consciousness.
When he awoke,
he checked on Marilyn, who had no pulse. He then went to Chip's room, where the boy appeared to be still asleep, which is a little shocking because he's at like 8 or 9 years old at this point. And if Marilyn was blood-curdling screams, although we don't really know how the house was laid out. I mean, it's totally possible that you can't hear anything. So Sam then heard a noise downstairs and ran to the first floor, where he saw the intruder exiting through the front door. Sam attacked the man. The two struggled again outside, and he was knocked unconscious a second time during the struggle. Wow. When he awoke the second time, he was still outside. Sam claimed that he'd run back inside to check on his family again. Marilyn still had no pulse, so he phoned Mayor Hook. The reason that this story is sussy, not that it's not possible, but it seems a little odd that he would go unconscious twice in a scuffle and also
Darren just gave a peace sign and then balloons popped up, but anyway,
great.
Keep going, Darren.
But that he would go and check on Marilyn again, like, she had no pulse the first time. I mean, maybe it's possible he just wanted to double check, but like, why wouldn't you kind of make that call immediately after he found that she had no pulse? That to me is a little sus. Yeah.
Very sus. Also, not for nothing, but didn't the last couple of details there that you were giving us here on the show give you any throwback to Casey from Scream running out of the house?
Yeah, a little bit. Like that trick episode that we did where we were like,
and then I was thinking of our trick episode, by the way. Oh, maybe I have to go back and listen. Which episode?
And then David Arquette,
Shmavid Sparfet.
Yeah, exactly.
What did we did have another
Courtney
name for
Cox
Dewey.
Did this, no. I mean.
There was another name. I think we called him like It's Dewey's name. I forget what his name was.
Yeah, we did
We'll have to look
something.
it up eventually.
Yeah, we will.
Nonetheless, anyway, in the days after Marilyn's death, her murder was front page news, as you can imagine, in Bayview. The media was immediately suspicious of Sam, and journalists seemed to consider him a prime suspect. And when her funeral was held on July 7th, 7-year-old Chip wasn't in attendance because his family was so concerned with how he'd be affected by the growing media circus. By the way, not to be too gross and inappropriate here, but I wonder if there was like open casket, because, you know, in the 50s, it was always like, sorry, not even to the 50s, but like leading up to basically like, I want to say what, the
70s. Open casket. Like,
it was like everything
out.
Was open casket. Like, no matter what happened, it was open casket. And I'm like,
yeah.
You know, with kids, you know, as understandable as it might be to try to give your last moments, I just don't know that kids need to be seeing anything open casket. I will say this.
Yeah.
I had great grandparents pass away when I was very young, like under the age of 10. And I vividly remember the imagery of them in their caskets. And I don't know that that's a good thing necessarily, to be honest.
Yeah. My eighth grade computer teacher passed away in her 30s. She had to have like a brain and kidney transplant. I remember she was the first person I ever saw dead, and we went. Ugh. And this was she was the class that I was in when September 11th happened. So this yeah. goes to show how long ago yeah. this was, in 2001, Miss Collins. And we went to go see her, and she had an open casket. She was like a 6'3" beautiful Black woman. Like, she was just fucking amazing. She was our favorite teacher. And I remember touching her. Like touching
oh
the body
yeah.
an open casket, and I'll never forget that. Like, it was like, not to be trite, but it was very chilling. Very chilling.
I can imagine. No, I mean, like, I don't know. Anyway, maybe we should bring that up on an NMR episode. And maybe if you guys listening, let us know what you think about that kind of stuff, and we'll bring it up on an episode in the future. But
yeah.
Anyway, so Chip wasn't there, but this proved to be a valid concern regarding the growing media situation, because the same day, a local publication openly criticized Sam for seemingly evading police interrogation. The piece was equally critical of law enforcement for not demanding Sam submit to questioning on the day of Marilyn's death. I mean, that's a fair assumption. I mean, a fair criticism.
Yeah.
On July 8th, the day after Marilyn's funeral, Sam issued a statement to the media letting the public know that he planned to fully cooperate with authorities and would be offering a $10,000 reward for the arrest of the conviction of his wife's killer. Excuse me. So on July 9th, police accompanied Sam back to his home for the first time since Marilyn's murder, and he assisted them with a reenactment so that the police were better able to piece together the events leading up to her death. However, that same day, Sam refused to sit down for a lie detector test.
Interesting, because he agreed to cooperate fully.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the 50s, where I feel like lie detector tests were very much used as evidence, whereas nowadays they're not really considered reliable. I think Sam may have been like, actually, I don't know that I want you to be catching me in any lies.
Right.
So while we know if he has lies to tell, who knows? We're about to find out. So while we now know, as I just mentioned, polygraph results are unreliable, they were much more heavily favored in the court in the 50s. And at the time, his refusal to sit for the test was significantly more suspicious.
That water's got something in it.
than it would be today. All right, I got through that one. So anyway, the media got wind of Sam's refusal to sit for the polygraph and printed even more criticisms under a headline of, quote, Dr. Balks at lie test, end quote. Oh, headlines. On July 10th, Sam finally sat for a formal interview with authorities. And during this interview, the topic of Sam's romantic infidelity was broached, specifically in regards to another hospital employee named Susan Hayes. Sam stated for the first time during his questioning that he did not have an affair with Susan, but Sam returned to work quickly, resuming his duties at the hospital on July 12th, although he wore dark sunglasses as he went through his rounds, complaining that the light hurt his eyes, presumably due to that head injury from the previous week.
Could you imagine if a doctor showed up in sunglasses, though? Wouldn't you be a little like, what's going on? I mean, I get it, because if you have a head injury or a migraine, I understand, but wouldn't you be like, huh?
Huh. It's an interesting choice here, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
Although Sam seemed to be working towards resuming his life, the media was still heavily invested in Marilyn's murder and couldn't understand why police weren't investigating further into the bizarre circumstances around her death. And good on journalism, by the way, to be keeping something like this going when maybe the police department didn't want it to.
Yeah, I mean, by mid-July, the press was openly calling for a formal inquest. Police gave in to the demands and scheduled one to begin on July 22nd. The three-day event was held at a local high school gym in order to accommodate the huge number of reporters present. Wow. And during this inquest, Sam was questioned 5.5 different times during sessions that each lasted 90 minutes long. That's a fuck ton of talking.
It's
just a lot. Now, these sessions included questions about what happened on the night of Marilyn's death, about his behavior in the subsequent weeks. Nothing was off limits, including the health of his marriage and his romantic relationship with his wife. Sam was asked repeatedly about whether he'd been romantically involved with Susan. He denied the allegations every time the questions arose. So there wasn't even like a hint of that, this being true.
Yeah.
Sam's lawyer was allowed to witness the inquest, but was prohibited from participating. And at one point, the attorney that seems not right. I mean, why would an attorney be like, don't answer that, Sam?
Yeah. I'm sure there's some sort of law around this that's hopefully changed since then, but lie detectors, like, you know, I don't know.
Or just like media inquests. I mean, even at one point, the attorney attempted to introduce evidence on behalf of his client and was ejected from the room. It seems kind of fucked up. Now, the coroner who examined Marilyn's body on July 4th was also questioned, during which time he gave his expert opinion that Sam himself was the killer.
Oh,
on July 20, on July 20, I don't know how you would kind of know that, though. Like, blunt force trauma, like, is blunt force trauma unless there's obvious DNA or a note,
yeah,
right? Like, I don't really, the evidence is that she's murdered or killed, but there's not really evidence that it's him. That's what I don't really understand. It feels like this media frenzy is playing into it, you know, this slain father. But yeah. Well, on July 23rd, one day into the three-day inquest, Cleveland PD formally took over the investigation from Bayview Law Enforcement. And on July 24th, the next day, Cleveland police questioned Susan Hayes, who admitted that, yes, she and Sam were involved in an affair. Hey, this is not looking good for Sam now.
Right.
Now, on July 30th, the front page of the Cleveland Press posed a question to the public with the headline, "Why isn't Sam Shepard in jail?" This is big. I mean, talk about due process. I mean, it sounds like the media has sort of already determined. I mean, as I'm going to discuss with Sarah next week, being a cheating husband does not make you a murderer. Well, that doesn't really prove anything, you know. And for Scott Peterson, I think that's kind of how they convicted him, of just thinking he was a scumbag, you know. And so, like, of course he murdered her. Yeah. Now, at 10 p.m. that same evening, Sam was arrested and charged with first-degree murder of Marilyn.
So on August 17th, Sam was indicted by a grand jury. The case against him had legs and would actually proceed to trial. Jurors were chosen from a pool of 75 community members. Of the jurors selected, only one denied having read about the story in the paper or otherwise consumed it in the media. I guess this can happen. I always find this super shocking to hear that people potentially would not have any clue about some of these very high profile things.
You'd be surprised. I know a couple whole private profile cases, and I'm talking someone that all of us would know. And 11 of 12 jurors had never even heard of this person. And I'm talking like A-list celebrity. 11 of 12 had didn't know who he was. I'm not talking about Andy. I'm talking about somebody else type of show. But the point is like, you know, it's possible. People don't read media the way that sometimes coastal elites read media, you know?
Absolutely. Wait, let me ask you, are you talking about, you were a juror on something?
My friend was a juror. Was a juror. Okay. So that's how I know that. Yeah.
Gotcha. I want to know after the show.
I will.
Okay. I hate to say that on air because I know people listening are going to be like, tell us who it was. But listen, maybe one day on Patreon, Darren. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Nonetheless, Sam's trial began on October 18th. The jury was taken on a field trip to visit the scene of the crime on the first day. Hundreds of reporters and onlookers stood nearby to watch as they toured Sam and Marilyn's home. One member of the news was even allowed to accompany jurors on the tour. And during trial, the coroner who performed Marilyn's autopsy took the stand, where he presented jurors with the photographs of her body. Sam was still his own personal prime suspect in Marilyn's murder. During the defense's cross-examination, the coroner was forced to admit that his autopsy report contained a number of errors, and that he had failed to perform tests on Marilyn's body that are considered standard in a suspected homicide. And it's like, that immediately makes me like, what is your motivation on that? You know,
reported a number of errors. I mean, you're the one giving the autopsy. I mean, that just seems a little, that's kind of like the creme de la creme. That is the thing.
Additionally, the coroner admitted that he had been unable to determine the weapon that killed Marilyn. He stated that he believed the laceration that killed her to have been made using a surgical tool, but no weapons had ever been found.
Is this Sam's brother? Is also a doctor?
So how are how are you able to determine that, sir? Police officers who processed the crime scene also took to the stand. They informed the jury that there had been no evidence of forcible entry into the Shepherd home or Marilyn's bedroom, nor were there signs of struggle that took place inside. Now, more interestingly, they testified that there was no blood on the doorknob of the front door. If Marilyn's killer had used the front door to leave immediately after killing her, as Sam claimed, there almost certainly would have been some blood or DNA, of course, smeared on the knob from the inside of the house, or even the
unless
outside,
you're using gloves and wash your hands after with gloves on.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's true too. Ooh, I just got an OJ flashback.
Yeah.
Susan Hayes was called to testify. She informed the jury that she and Sam had been involved in an affair since 1951, perjuring Sam. The prosecution pointed to this dishonesty on Sam's part as a sign that he would lie under oath to protect himself, which is a very smart tactic from the prosecution. Sam testified on his own behalf, recounting the nights of July 3rd for the jury.
Now, after already having undergone many interrogation sessions, Sam's story remained identical to his prior retellings, which is a big deal. I mean, that's kind of hard to do unless you're telling the truth. I mean, who was it?
Yeah.
Mark Twain. It was like, if you don't lie, you don't have anything. If you always tell the truth, you don't have anything to remember. So that's, that's pretty.
Someone
I think
liked
it was
her
Mark
American literature classes in college.
I guess. Well, he also informed the jury that his wife had a habit of leaving their front door unlocked, which may have explained the lack of forced entry into the home. And again, this was pre-Charles Manson, when I feel like people started to really lock their doors. I mean, I feel like that was the craze that kind of swept the nation. People were a lot more trustworthy back then. And when the prosecution questioned Sam, they tried to make it appear as though it was the couple's marriage was falling apart and that he'd murder his wife so that he could pursue a full relationship with Susan. This is very Scott Peterson. Now, however, Sam insisted that although the couple had their issues and their sex life took a blow after the birth of their son, of course, he had never considered leaving her or filing for divorce. Furthermore, once his relationship with Susan was no longer a secret, he seemed quite forthcoming about their affair, even admitting the trips they'd taken together and that he'd lied to Marilyn about it. The prosecution seemed to struggle with tying his infidelity to a motive for murder, which they should. Sam's trial lasted 9 weeks in total. That's a long trial, during which time the juror was supposed to be totally sequestered to maintain their impartiality. But jurors were allowed to make unsupervised phone calls during this sequestration. And on December 21st, the jury found Sam guilty of second-degree murder of his wife. The court sentenced Sam to life in prison with the possibility of parole after serving 10 years. Law enforcement held onto the keys to the Shepherd home throughout the trial. And it wasn't until after sentencing that Sam's defense team was finally able to even access his house to gather their own evidence. When they were able to finally start a proper investigation, the defense hired a nationally renowned criminologist, Dr. Paul Kirk, to assist.
And so once inside the home, Dr. Kirk was quickly able to establish, based on blood spatter patterns, that Marilyn's killer had committed the murder with his left hand and Sam was right-handed.
This is also very To Kill a Mockingbird, if we remember how it was kind of determined, even though obviously he was found guilty because he was black. I mean, what Atticus Finch was trying to prove is, how is he going to strangle somebody who only has one working good hand? And you're telling me that you saw, you know what I mean? So it's just interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious about this because I'm not an expert. I'm just shocked that they could potentially determine something like the murder happened with a left hand. But okay, I'll believe it for now.
Well, if you think about, you know, how a blow would go, if you're right-handed, if you're striking someone, if the slash is here, what are you going to do it that way? You're not. You're right-handed. You're going to go there. You know what I mean? Like,
good point. They know you just convinced me. Guys, you have to look at Darren's example on YouTube.
You gotta smash that subscribe button. That's what you gotta
smash
do.
The subscribe button, you guys, on YouTube, and get kind of slasher testimonial here from Darren.
Yes.
No, that's a good point. I hadn't quite thought of it that way. So aside from that, there was also a large pool of blood left on the bedroom closet door that, when tested, matched neither Marilyn nor Sam. Okay, that's kind of a big deal.
That's
at
a
this
big
point.
Deal.
The defense team petitioned for a new trial based on the shocking new evidence, but their motion was denied in May of 1955. Sam's defense team spent 9 years filing appeal after appeal. And in July of 1964, almost a decade later, one of the petitions was finally granted. The court found that Sam had been denied a fair trial. Far too much publicity had been allowed before and during the first trial. There was a huge issue surrounding juror impartiality and an unauthorized communication during sequestration. And there was some question as to the impartiality of the initial trial judge as well. The new judge declared that Sam's conviction had been a violation of his constitutional rights and that he was to be released immediately on $10,000 bond while he waited awaited a new trial. Oh, Magic is in the background meowing. It's his dinner time.
Good. Yeah. Hello.
Hi, Magic. Sam was released from prison on July 16th, 1964. Now, the following week, Sam appeared before a three-judge panel where the court decided Sam could remain free on bail while a new trial was set up. On October 8th, a couple of months later, Sam appeared before another two-hour-long appeals panel to determine whether Sam could remain free until this new trial was ready. The panel's ruling came in 7 months later on May 5th, 1965. This shit just takes so long. This time the panel overturned the previous ruling. Sam would not be granted a new trial and must return to prison unless the court agreed to grant him a continuance. This seems a little bit unfair. I mean, there's a lot of different things here where I'm like, then why
especially
are
the evidence?
Letting... Yeah, based on everything, especially when there's like three judges doing panels, like what? The issue was brought to the U.S. Supreme Court, actually, who ruled in November of 1965 that Sam's first trial was indeed unconstitutional and he must be granted a new one, which I would have, you know, listen, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm sitting here reading this information and I know that that's very true. Now, Sam's second trial started on October 24th, 1966, and this time the new judge declared that all photographers and cameras must stay outside of the courtroom. Smart move. He also issued a gag order barring the media from obtaining any information about the trial other than what was said in open court. Very smart tactic given how things appeared to have gone haywire in the last trial.
Yeah, and I think it can, I think as we're seeing, it can severely affect a case. Sam upped his defense team's game for this new trial. He was now represented by F. Lee Bailey, a arguably, but in Megan's opinion, because we spoke to her about this, phenomenal defense attorney, famous for representing O.J. Simpson, Patty Hearst, and Albert DeSalvo, who we know was the Boston Strangler. Now, Bailey showed diagrams to the jury, diagrams of the blood spatter made by a left-handed attacker, and discussed the large spot of blood on the closet door that belonged to neither Sam nor Marilyn, which seems like a pretty big deal to me.
Well, can I add something to that? I wonder if we knew if it was human blood, though, because for all we know, listen, I'm just throwing things out there. A dog could have given birth to puppies in the closet for all we know. Like,
I mean,
you know, so it's interesting. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Koch, the criminologist who also testified on Sam's behalf, informing the jury that two of Sam's teeth had been badly broken during the struggle with the alleged intruder. The broken teeth had sliced up the inside of Sam's mouth, causing damage that Dr. Koch stated could not have been intentionally self-inflicted. That does seem a little odd. I guess it could be, but that just seems kind of crazy.
I mean, how do we know for sure that it was an intruder that broke the teeth? Could it have been Marilyn?
I mean, another doctor testified as to the damage done to Sam's spine during the struggle. His spinal vertebrae had fractured and his spinal column had been bruised. More injuries, this expert witness stated, could not have been self-inflicted. I mean, that is true. If he was trying to kill his wife, just fucking kill her. Why are we having this huge struggle? The jury began deliberating on November 16th, 1966, and returned a unanimous verdict of not guilty the same day. Sam was set free once and for all.
Interesting. So in 1967, Sam was able to actually regain his medical license and resume practicing medicine. However, with only a few months of working at a hospital in Youngstown, Ohio, Sam was sued for medical malpractice after one of his patients died. Sam stopped practicing medicine and began working as a professional wrestler. And his stage name, Darren, was The Killer. I don't like that. Well, anyway,
I don't love that, because then you're just kind of like dancing in their faces a little bit about it. I don't know if I love that.
It's almost like maybe you write a book called If I Did It. I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
Something like that.
Sam began abusing alcohol and drugs and was found dead in his home on April 6, 1970, less than 4 years after regaining his freedom. His cause of death was determined to be a deadly mixture of alcohol combined with an overdose of pills. We still have no idea who actually murdered Marilyn Shepherd or why, for that matter.
The Shepherd's family attorney has openly stated that he suspects a man named Richard Eberling, a local handyman who was employed by the family. A piece of Marilyn's jewelry was allegedly found in his possession shortly after her death, although there's no proof this actually happened, nor that this means he actually killed her. Right. I mean, there's kind of tons of evidence to say that, but they are posing him as a possible suspect. Yeah. Richard was sent to prison for the unrelated murder of another woman. That's kind of big. And yeah. died in jail in 1998. Sam and Marilyn's son Chip is now grown up and works with children whose lives have been affected by crime. Mm. Wow, I mean, talk about paying it forward. He's also passionate about prison reform and is still working to have his father legally declared innocent, which I hope he gets.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't know who did this. I'm wondering if they still have that DNA from that blood in that closet, if they could run that through CODIS these days and see if they can find something.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a different time.
The 50s were a long time ago, but not that long ago. You know, there's still some, the killer could still be around, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, let us know what you guys think. At Jake Thrasher, at Carpe Darren, obviously on our Facebook page, Shit and Disturb Podcast Fans, on our Patreon, or you can subscribe, smash button, or you can comment below in the comment section. Although YouTube comments tend to be they freak me out a little bit, I gotta be honest with you.
No, our comments have been good. I've been looking at them. My friend, our friend Jeff, who's I gave a shout out last week on the show, is a big commenter on every episode. He loves commenting. So
good, I love that. Okay, good. Yeah. Keep the good comments coming then.
Yeah, keep them coming, guys. Let's get into listener shout outs, Darren. I have an interesting one for you right off the top. Roxanne on Patreon wants to know where you got your wired headphones.
Okay, so the reason I use wired headphones is because the sound is better than Bluetooth. Bluetooth tends to kind of mess things up. These are Jaybird. Mm-hmm. Jaybird are the ones that I use. So that's right. Where I got mine, although I don't normally recommend it outside of just pure recording when you can kind of like sit down. I don't like walking with wired, but I do find that wired is just, it's just more reliable than Bluetooth. And I don't want to mess this up while we're recording.
She's a professional. You know, after we talked about headphones a couple of weeks ago, I realized that I can keep one in my ear, Darren. I'm giving you guys on YouTube a little
Magic.
Actually, yes, Magic is listening in on the other side, but it makes it a little easier to just kind of maneuver around, and you know, it is what it is. I still have
I meant you only had
headphones.
One in because the other ear is to listen to when Magic is ready for dinner.
Well, he's clearly ready. I doubt the microphone picked it up, but he was distracting me by screaming.
I mean,
right
sweetie,
next to my feet.
Dinner time. Anyway, I know. Well, Mel in our Facebook group said, quote, I feel like we need a quarterly episode where John features a mixed drink he makes with one of the various flavored Baileys. I'm not opposed to this, Mel. Then we could all make the drink and post photos of it here.
Oh, Mel. Okay. I'm not against that.
I'm not against that either.
We
kind of have to buy Baileys
every single week. Yeah, I don't know. That's a
no,
lot.
No, quarterly. But she said quarterly.
Oh, quarterly. Okay, I could get into quarterly. Listen, I still have a bottle of, I don't know who even gave this to me, S'mores Baileys on my fridge. I could probably crack that thing open next week potentially and get something going. But
maybe a little s'mores on
the rocks. Yeah. Well, guys, have you subscribed to us on YouTube yet? Hi, if you're watching on YouTube, you can now watch the show right on YouTube. Please make sure to subscribe if you watch us.
We have full episodes, clips from the shows, interviews, all kinds of fun YouTube-y stuff. Subscribe today. Hit that smash button.
Like Darren said, and if you want all the early access and to be in on all the jokes and all the murders before anybody else, you can join us on Patreon, because for as little as $5 a month, you can get all of the behind the scenes exclusive content. We've got 3 years of content up there, you guys. You're
can't believe
now's
it.
A great time to subscribe.
Absolutely. And it's even cheaper if you sign up annually. Guys, with inflation happening the way it is, this is kind of a deal. It's a steal. It's a meal. It's a feel. That's all I'm going to say.
That's good, Darren.
I just
on
made that
toes
up.
Toes today. That's great.
That's right. That's right.
No, on inflation, though, but can you think of anything that's as little as $5 a month these days?
Not even a fucking Starbucks tea is as little as $5. Okay, people?
Absolutely. I mean, I used to be able to say on the show, as for as little as a cup of coffee at Starbucks, I don't remember the last time I got something at Starbucks less than $8.
So. Yeah, I don't think they have that. So, no, you know, we're offering you the deal that Starbucks used to kind of give you.
Hello, you guys. You're saving money, actually.
Hello. Hello.
We're better than Starbucks in that way. By the
way, right.
We're going to sign off now. Now, normally I do Chook Your Mushrooms, but I really got to say my new sign off might just have to be this week at least. Take your vitamins. I took a zinc supplement, a D3 supplement, and a multivitamin, and my cold went away literally within 24 hours after I started taking them. So
you need
guys,
more D in your
care
life.
Of yourselves. I need more D3. I need more
you
D3.
You need more D3. You need more DC.
Oh,
move to LA and you'll get both.
Oh my
That's
God.
That's all I'm going to say. Guys, my sign off is going to be smash that subscribe button. Yeah. Smash it.
You're such a YouTuber now. You're really leaning into that YouTuber culture.
I mean, sweetie, if you got it, flaunt it.
There you go. And on that
that's
note,
all I'll say.
All right. We'll see you guys for another NMR and a new episode next week. Goodbye.